You're listening to the Faster Than Normal podcast, where we know that having ADD or ADHD is a gift, not a curse. Each week, we interview people from all around the globe, from every walk of life in every profession, from rock stars to CEOs, from teachers to politicians, who have learned how to unlock the gifts of their ADD and ADHD diagnosis and used it to their personal and professional advantage, to build businesses, to become millionaires, or to simply better their lives. And now, here's the host of the Faster Than Normal podcast, the man who doesn't understand how anyone could have leftover pizza, Peter Shankman.
Hey guys, Peter Shankman. Welcome to another episode of Faster Than Normal. I'm thrilled that you're here. We haven't had an episode in a couple of weeks. We've had a little bit of a backlog, so it's nice to be getting into them. We're in the middle of, well, the beginning of summer. It feels like the middle of summer here because it's about 108 degrees in Midtown Manhattan. I'm staring out at a ridiculously steamy New York City out of my window. But guys, I can tell you, we have an interview today that I've been trying to get since I launched the podcast. And I chalked it up to never actually getting. I never thought I'd get this family on the podcast. I emailed them. I reached out to them. I was thinking about flying a plane over their house. Never heard back. Finally, through Scott Monty, who you know as the second guest on Faster Than Normal after Ned Hallowell, Scott said, oh yeah, I know those guys. I'm like, thank you for letting me know that 6 years later. But Scott introduced us a month later. We are recording. I am talking about
The Obamas.
The Obamas. There you go.
We're talking about us like we're the freaking Obamas.
Well, let me tell you guys, you guys have a history. I'm talking about the Holderness family. I'm talking about Kim and Penn Holderness, who their book, as you know, ADHD is awesome. I've already seen t-shirts, people wearing them. But more importantly, you know them as the ADHD video family. They started out with the Christmas Jammies video first, and they sort of blew up from there. I remember seeing that when it first came out. They have a pretty storied history. Penn's been in the television business for years and years and years. He was a sports director. He was a host for Home Garden TV, reporter for ESPN, news anchor in Raleigh. And it's funny, when you Google the family, we get much more about Penn than we do about Kim. So Kim, tell her story in a bit, but we got the Holderness family on Faster Than Normal. So this is like, I can shut the podcast down after this. We're done. This is all I had to do. Guys, welcome. It's great to finally get you on.
Well, thanks for having us. Sorry it took so long. Sorry.
That's the beauty of ADHD though. You know, I'd think about it like, God, I got to send them another email. And then I'd forget about it for like 6 months. So we finally made the connection. That's awesome. Welcome. Let's start with the basics. I mean, everyone knows your videos. Everyone knows the family as the Holderness family. But let's go back a bit. Tell me about your villain origin story, right? How did ADHD become the passion? Because I doubt, I'm looking at your age, you're a couple of years younger than me, Pam. So I doubt you were diagnosed as a kid. I'm assuming this is more of an adult thing. So tell me about what life was like pre-diagnosis.
Yeah, you're dead on. So I think, Peter, I think we're probably similar ages, and, you know, they didn't have that diagnosis. They may have in extreme cases, but certainly I had never heard of it until college.
Right.
So as a kid, like little weird signs looking back that maybe I should have known, I used to chew on my shirt collar, and I had this huge, like, liquid ring around my shirt. And people would think I'd been running or sweating. No, I just was chewing on my shirt. I did a lot of things to fidget. I ripped up every napkin I ever had underneath the dinner table. I think more importantly, I had a really tough time getting to the end of conversations with friends of mine. And when you're a kid, that's fine. You're kind of bouncing all over the place. But the older I got, the more I realized that I was having a tough time maintaining meaningful relationships because it probably seemed like all I cared about was myself.
Right. Was there social acuity or lack thereof as well?
There was a little bit of that. I mean, I think, you know, I was a pretty good athlete growing up. And so I hid behind that, and I was a pretty good musician growing up. And I sort of found my group of people there in theater I think that most people in theater have a little bit of this type of brain. And it allowed me to be spontaneous and to express myself in an unusual fashion.
I think that one of the things about, you know, about ADHD is that when we are before diagnosis, there's like, you know, I call it pre-D and post-D, pre-diagnosis, post-diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Pre-D, depending on your environment, that has a lot to do with whether or not your ADHD is positive or negative. In junior high, I went to a local public junior high school in New York City and got the crap kicked out of me every day because I never knew when to shut up and I never knew when to, you know, focus and be quiet and talk at a turn. But I went to high school of performing arts and I was a musician and I was an actor. And that was an audition school, the fame school. And I got in and that gave me sort of an outlet. Mm-hmm. It didn't help my social status or my social acuity, but it definitely helped in class a little bit. And it wasn't until my mid-30s when my therapist, you know, said, so we never talk about your ADHD. And I'm like, my what? And he goes, your ADHD. I'm like, I'm not ADHD. He just looked at me. He literally spent like 3 minutes like this, you know? finally got tested, and that sort of cleared up a lot of stuff. But, you know, one of the interesting things, you, your family, myself, we've figured out ways, we've looked at this because we were told, at least for me, I was told for so long that it was a disadvantage, right? And mm-hmm. I was told from early on that I was broken. I figured out a way to look at it as I'm not, I'm gifted. Mm-hmm. And you guys have done the same thing. I mean, obviously the title of your book is ADHD is awesome. So you've learned to do the same thing, but here's a question that I've wanted to pose to you guys for years because I get it all the time. For a lot of people, ADHD isn't awesome. For a lot of people, it's ruining their lives, right? And I've given talks and I've been in front of tens of thousands of people. They come up to me after, they go, you know, wow, it's great that this works for you. I can't hold a job, right? I'm on my third marriage. I can't, my kids won't talk to me. There, for a lot of people, it's not the greatest thing in the world. And I don't take away from the fact that the majority of my success, my entrepreneurial success, everything I've done is because of it, not in spite of it. But for a lot of people, they haven't found their groove yet, right? And I say yet because I believe that everyone can figure out at some point, whether through therapy, medication, or usually a combination of both, they can figure out a way to make this work for them. But a lot of people haven't yet. And there's a stat that says up to 80% of incarcerated men in prison are neurodiverse and undiagnosed. So, you know, because when you're growing up, there are two types of ways to get the dopamine. One is very positive and one is very negative. Mm-hmm. Depending on how you've grown up, the lifestyle in which you were living, you gravitate towards one of them. I was a wimp who knew how to sing. So I found the stage. You know, other people find crime, drugs, whatever the case may be. So I bring this question to you as sort of the hardest question of our 15 minutes together, because this one is important. We talk about how great it is, but there are downsides. And it's a lot easier to make really great videos about the upsides and about the benefits, right? And even turning some of the downsides, oh, I can't find my thing, or I was supposed to do this 20 minutes ago, into comedic upsides. Mm-hmm. But do you feel when we do this, we're sort of glossing over the difficulties and the hardships people are having? It's almost like a screw you. Oh, you just haven't figured it out yet. You'll get there, right? And you don't want to disable that.
Right.
I think it depends on who you're talking to. I think that when you're talking to a child who's being diagnosed right now, who's 8 years old, I think a little bit of encouragement and a little bit of a reminder that there are good sides to ADHD goes a long way, particularly when you consider how crappy of a name it is. And an 8-year-old is getting hit with deficit hyperactivity and disorder. As an 8-year-old, a lot of times without the context of good things. Now, as an adult, I do want to say we called it ADHD is awesome because the definition of awesome is different from what most people think. Awesome actually means both inspiring and incredible and also terrifying.
Yeah.
It's scary.
Yeah. So the awesome power of that nuclear bomb. Yeah. Right.
Right.
Yeah. I have no intention of any time I give a talk or even if you read the book of glossing over this. We don't want to do toxic positivity here. What we do want to do is you keep talking about these two sides. It's great and it sucks. It's great and it sucks. My firmest belief is that those two things are also interconnected, right? Mm-hmm. All of the things that I struggle with on a daily life with executive functioning that lead me into a lot of trouble and sometimes occasionally endangering my family because I'm leaving a stove on or something like that. That same part of my brain is what makes me creative, spontaneous, able to think of new ideas and successful at my job.
Yeah. And I will say, so this book was written in three parts. The first third of this book is about how it sucks. I have to say, so our son was diagnosed with ADHD 2 years ago when he was 12, and we were already deep into the research for this book. And so, and I already have this husband who has found this path that like it's very, and but even when they were giving the diagnosis to me, you know, sitting in that office, it was incredibly daunting. It was like this really daunting medical diagnosis. And right away you're hit with just that stat about the, you know, men that are incarcerated being undiagnosed. We even talk about in the book about how you, like your chances of divorce are higher.
The list is ridiculous.
The list of what happens. And so as a mom, I'm looking at my sweet angel boy and I'm like, oh, fart. Yeah. I was really overwhelmed by that. So we do not gloss over how, I mean, in our lives, we are very close to people who have lost jobs, who have lost marriages, who like, it is a part of our daily life that we live with this, and we are not pretending it doesn't exist. I think part of the mission of this book is to acknowledge that is very real, and it sucks, and it presents different in men than it does in women, and women and minorities are underdiagnosed. Like we're acknowledging all of that. Plus, okay, it totally sucks, but listen, like you found your thing. You guys, both of you men here on this Zoom have found your special skills in creative arts and an entrepreneurial, both of you have found an entrepreneurial path. We've talked to so many adults that Penn made a joke and he even wrote about the book, like, oh, to be an attorney, it would be so hard. We've so many people in contract law that have ADHD and they're in tax law. They find it fascinating, but it helps them hyper-focus. We met a man, he owned a landscape company and he used to do like big, like days long installations. He couldn't handle it because he was like, I was at one house for 3 days. Now he switched that to now he does like fertilizing and it takes like 10 minutes per pot. So there are, I'm not going to gloss it over and rainbows and sunshine. And that is not what we're trying to do, but we're also trying to present with this particular neurodiversity, there are some things. I'm completely jealous of your brains in so many ways. Like the fact that you guys can hyper-focus on something when it's positively applied, like, damn, get me some of that. Yeah. Like that, it has been proven that the ADHD brain is like they did tests. You guys are more creative. Yeah. And so I'm sitting here, I like to picture myself a creative person, but what you two come up with, you know, and even just in a work setting is pretty outside the box. And Penn is always the first one to say like, well, what if we did it like this and we flip it upside down? Like the fact that his brain so goes so naturally to that, I'm very jealous of. So I think with this particular neurodiversity, I think you can say there are upsides and the way that there are, I mean, I have anxiety and OCD. Like I'm trying real hard to find an upside to anxiety. I'm sure there are, but like, I don't, if my anxiety made me incredibly creative, I'd be writing a book about it. Yeah, but right now, my anxiety keeps me in bed some days. So yeah, so that's my TED Talk. Thanks for coming.
You know what I find fascinating about that is that when you acknowledge the negatives, so my assistant Megan, who has been with me for 15 years now, God bless this woman. There's a space in heaven for her because she's put up with me 15 years and a lot of my success is due to her. But you know, two examples. The first one is that I have a prescription for Concerta and I take it maybe once a week, once every 10 days. I take it on days when I wake up in the morning and I ask Alexa to read me my calendar first thing I do, I wake up 3:45, get on the Peloton, get the dopamine. And while I'm finishing the bike ride, I ask Alexa to tell me my schedule. And if the first thing that she says, today you have 14 events. The first event is an all day event. It's called pill day. And if I have a pill day, that means Megan put on the calendar that I have at least 4 meetings and I should take a pill because no amount of Peloton or exercise or running is going to handle me for more than 4 meetings, right? So I've come to that sort of conclusion that creating the environment is half the battle, right? On days like this, I'm putting together my daughter's, but we just got a deal, a company, so I sent us some mattresses, right? So great, awesome. Never occurred to me that she needed a new frame because it's a bigger mattress. Let's buy a frame from Amazon and put it together in the morning when the bed arrives this afternoon, no problem. So that was my morning, right? Don't need a pill for that. So talk to me, walk me through what your average morning is, or at least your average, are you rigid in certain things that absolutely have to be done? Can you not do your day without them? Things like that. Because there are two types of people. The flying by the seat of the pants is awesome, except for things like, you know, schedules, meetings, actual appointments, focus, things like that. So I'm curious to know if you have a sort of behind the scenes ritual that starts, when do you wake up, the whole thing.
I've got to be careful just for me and my job not to have anything too rigid, because one of our most successful days or on our most successful days, something's coming to us spontaneously and we have to pivot immediately and go do it.
Let me interrupt. I'm sorry. I probably didn't make clear. What I'm talking about is just to get through any kind of day. Do you have certain things in the morning that you have to do or, you know, whatever? Sure.
Coffee is my main thing. So I think coffee is my Peloton. Fitness is incredibly important to me as well. I cannot wake up at 3:45. I was a morning news anchor for a long time and it just did not work for me. I am so impressed with people who can, because you can get so much done. As far as like basic systems, like when I make breakfast, I put a timer on so that I don't leave the stove on. And so it just dings after 10 minutes to make sure I don't leave the stove on. So that's sort of an avoiding disaster thing. And then I make a list every morning, and it's a paper list. It's not a phone list. I take it around with me because of the dopamine hit of being able to check it off.
Yep.
But otherwise, we have sort of a structure work-wise in our week where we'll have a meeting on Monday, we'll shoot on Tuesday, we'll edit on Wednesday. But in my opinion, we have to be ready for that to implode and start anew if something cool happens that we have to work on.
But I will say, as like a passenger here and just watching, if he doesn't get the morning exercise,
yeah.
It's a rough go. And yeah, he's a paperless kind of guy. He has, of course, we have a Google Calendar and the whole thing, but he walks around with his paper list just to, you know, map out the day. Even though it's written in a digital way, he has to write it down.
Talk to me about exercise, because both of you are annoyingly fit. Like disliking you fit. You know, I've done two Ironman triathlons and you look at me and you go, no, Peter, you're confused. Look at you. You've sat on your ass eating popcorn and watching the movie Iron Man. But no, I've really done two. But I don't look like your typical athlete. You look like you're in the gym 6 hours after a night, after a cold plunge. What are you doing? Talk to me about your workout, both of you.
Well, I've gotten a little more fit in the last year, mainly because I've basically cut out booze during the week. Like that was like step number one. And it was crazy. Like all the fitness in the world that I could have done would not have equated.
Yeah, you can't outrun a bad diet or alcohol. No question about it.
To just doing that simple thing. But I, it's a pretty diverse workout. I think that's another part of my ADHD. I don't think I can do the same thing every morning. So I'll ride the Peloton once a week. I'll do some like couples training with Kim twice a week. And then I've started rucking, which is just like carrying a bunch of crap all over the neighborhood. And that will do it for you. Like an hour of rucking.
Yeah.
And then I play tennis.
So I will say he on his favorite days will go to the gym in the morning. We do strength training, and then in the evening he'll play tennis. So he'll do two a day, several days a week, which is really annoying.
Really early, really late.
But we used to do triathlon. We did a half Ironman, and I always had a dream of doing a full Ironman, like always the dream. But then after the half, I was like, you know what? We had friends that were hit by cars on their cycling training, and so I was like, I can't do that.
That's incredible that you've done.
Yeah, that's amazing. That
Gordon Ramsay was just taken out last week training for his next Ironman. He was taken out by a
ball. That's what I'm saying.
He's fine now, but it's like bruised and really he would dead without a helmet.
It's dangerous. Like, and I'm not like that good at it enough to like risk my life.
Yeah, I was in Central Park doing loops at like 3 a.m. because that was the only time I could get in to get 40 miles, 50 miles, 60 miles. And I actually got arrested once for exercising before the park opened. I born and raised in New York City, never knew you could close Central Park. Apparently it doesn't open until sunrise. So lesson learned. I'm like, guys, you realize I work in marketing. I'm going to have a field day with this. Front page of the Daily News the next day is me holding the summons with a cat. The headline was no running from this ticket.
What?
Yeah, we had fun with that.
Amazing.
Yeah,
Google it.
All right, a couple more questions. I want to keep this short, but I really love that we got to talk. The inspiration for the videos, okay? Obviously, everyone gets their creativity from different ways. I carry a GoPro with me and a mic with me everywhere I go because I never know where things are going to pop up. I keep an Insta 360 on my scooter that I use to take my daughter to school, zoom in and out of cars. We've had some great stuff with that. How do you? I don't want to know how you get your inspiration, but I want to know when it hits, how do you save it? Because a lot of the things they do, see, I have this amazing idea. What was that? You know, 5 minutes later, it's gone.
I say it out loud to my wife, who's a great sounding board, and she does the same thing for me. So I say it, I speak it into existence, I think is the way to put that. And generally speaking, once that happens and we can get to that improvisational yes and model, we just start going back and forth until we get
on a notes. Like we both have like on the notes app.
You share.
And it's so funny. My inspiration typically, because I think we come up with the ideas of the videos, but I am usually on a walk and I try not to have like headphones in, and I'm just, and I will, my notes app from my walks is like so janky. I'm like, what the hell was I talking about?
Yeah.
Penn usually comes out of the shower like, oh my God, I got it. Yeah. And so we immediately write it down because you're absolutely right. It just like leaves the brain. But even just sitting here, we sat down 5 minutes before, he was editing right before we came on with you. But I had an idea for like two different scripts. And he's like, can you watch this video? I'm like, no, I can't. I have to get this out of my brain. So we start like a notes app and then we go straight to a Google Doc and then we kind of spread that around.
That actually brings up an interesting question. Can you do this? No, I can't. I have to do this. My phone is constantly on silent except for, or do not disturb, except for my daughter, my parents and my daughter's school, you know, and my ex in case there's something up with my daughter. And my ex will call and I'll always answer because I want to make sure everything's okay with the daughter. I don't care about the ex, but you know, I want to make sure it's okay with the daughter. But no, we're good friends. But she'll call and I'll say, hey, everything okay with Jess? It's like, yeah, I just have a question. Okay, I'm in the middle of deep work. Can I call you back? Yeah, let me just ask you this one thing. Okay, that's not me calling you back. That's you pulling me up to work. Right. And that's become, that was a huge sticking point for all the years we're married. What do you do? Do you have, like, for instance, I have a red, yellow, green traffic light on my desk. And when my assistant comes in and when she comes to New York and she's working here and she sees what color it is, she knows red, you can't, I'm head down. Yellow, if it's important, green, go crazy, I'm free. Right. Mm-hmm. So what do you guys do to sort of prevent, Ben, when you're in a deep work state, when you're flowing and everything's, you know, and Kim walks in and says, oh, hey, I have this, check, you know, and now you're out of it. What do you do to sort of make sure that you stay in your zone?
For starters, I love the idea of the traffic light.
That's the greatest thing in the world.
I mean, one of the biggest metaphors we harp on in our book is the fact that our brains are more like on and off switches instead of dimmers. You can't really bring a dimmer up to 50% with like three other dimmers. You have to either be doing one thing or the other. And when someone says something like, hey, let me ask you something really quickly, for me at least, and for a lot of people with ADHD, that can short circuit you. So the question you're asking is really a relationship question. Because if you guys are able to see each other, you and whoever it is that you're talking, and then you're able to say, hey, I am flawed in this way. I am flawed in the sense that if you come up to me with something and I'm onto something else important, I need to politely and thank you afterwards, ask you to let me finish this thing. And I think we've gotten to that point.
Yeah, we had a rough start when we were working together for sure.
Yeah.
And I mean, we went to like marriage counseling and crap. So I now respect that I can spin a lot of plates at the same time. And I mean, and I think neurotypical brains are the same way, but I can do a lot of things at once. He cannot. So if he's writing something or editing something, there's like a boundary up. And for that reason, he said today, hey, cause we were going to talk with you at 11. He goes until 10:50, I'm editing. So I know, like, and we have an attic up here that he works in. So I didn't come upstairs until 10:50. If I needed him in emergency, of course, but like we don't, like he silences alerts. He signed, like we have a group chain with the people we work with and that they don't expect any answer from him. So yeah, like we are just we acknowledge each other's boundaries around that. And I try to just really accept that and know that he's doing his thing. And he does it for me too. Like he asked me to come watch the thing. I'm like, I can't. So I don't know if that answered your question, but we're pretty respectful of each other.
It was perfect. It was perfect. Yeah. I love that. You know, it's funny because I have, my daughter's learned that and she's learned that about me as well. And she understands when she comes in, I think the term was first used in the movie Up in the Air. When she comes in and sees me typing with purpose, right? she knows to give me some time, which is great. But all right, awesome. So I want to be respectful of time. We try to keep we've run long, but it was totally worth it.
We're good.
No worries.
No, I try to keep the interviews 15 minutes because everyone,
Okay.
We're famous for that. We're famous for like 15 minute interviews, ADHD.
You're being respectful of the people who are listening.
The people of the audience, exactly. Right. I don't care about you guys. No. But I would love to have you guys back on for a second edition because this was a blast. And I think there's a lot more we could definitely talk about. Guys, you can find them at the Hall of I timed it. If you type THE HOL, that's all you need, and Google understands it. So congratulations, you're at 6.5 letters. There's 6 letters, 1 caret, 1 space to first come up with you guys. So well done on that. But this was awesome. You can find them everywhere. Their videos are spectacular. I would love to have you guys back on again. And you've been listening to Fast and Normal as always. Both of you, I really, really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for not giving up on us.
No, kept it going. All right, we'll be back next week with another interview. Stay tuned, stick around, be well.
You've been listening to the Faster Than Normal podcast. We're available on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and of course at www.fasterthennormal.com. I'm your host, Peter Shankman, and you can find me at petershankman.com and at Peter Shankman on all of the socials. If you like what you've heard, why not head over to your favorite podcast platform of choice and leave us a review? The more people who leave positive reviews, the more the podcast is shown, and the more people we can help understand that ADHD is a gift, not a curse. Opening and closing themes were performed by Stephen Byram, and the opening introduction was recorded by Bernie Wagenblast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week.